This is a CBC podcast.
If you're going to tell someone to take this job and shove it, it's hard to imagine doing it on a bigger stage than Canada's finance minister. On Monday, Chrystia Freeland didn't just quit. She published an open letter to the prime minister explaining why. It may mean the end of Justin Trudeau's job too. What will it mean for this province, which hasn't had a very good working relationship with Ottawa for years? For the latest, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC's Saskatchewan. Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what kind of reaction has there been in Saskatchewan to this?
It's been interesting because Premier Moe, who's been a really outspoken critic, as we know, of the Prime Minister and the Liberal government, has been fairly understated over the last little bit. Some shots here and there on certain specific things when it comes to potential retaliatory things over the U.S. and trade. But taking sort of the Team Canada approach, talking about how we need to be unified, you're seeing more of the premiers like Doug Ford, Daniel Smith, take a kind of a front and center role in this when it comes to the U.S. relations because of all the chaos happening in Ottawa, and it's unclear who's going to be running the government in the near future. But we had this week Carla Beck come out and write a letter to, speaking of letters, write a letter to Premier Moe saying, hey, let's get together, let's meet, I'd like to help you out, the opposition will offer your help. I don't think there's a precedent that I can see of an opposition provincial government getting involved in bilateral relations with a foreign country. Maybe I'm wrong. And I don't think Scott Moe, he's never given an indication that he's going to take Carla Beck up on that offer. But it has been a quieter week, given all the chaos that's happening in Ottawa. I think that's maybe by design. The Conservative Party's been pretty quiet too, federally. So not the usual rhetoric we've seen from Scott Moe in the past when Trudeau's been down.
I guess if your political opponents are taking each other out, you can just sit back and be quiet. What do you make of all this?
When your enemy's killing themselves, don't interrupt them. And that's absolutely the case right now. I give Scott Moe credit for that political strategy, but actually doing the right – it also happens to be the right political strategy. I don't particularly think that Daniel Smith is helping anybody. Doug Ford is taking more of a pro-Canada stance, but I don't know if that's necessarily helpful. There's criticism that, well, Scott Moe isn't doing anything, or we're not seeing him do anything, and that show me what he's doing. Sometimes doing nothing is absolutely the things that premiers need to do, or at least doing nothing publicly. It hasn't been perfect. We'll probably get into the whole SIR thing related, clean air, energy, clean electoral regulations that in which they are saying something and maybe in a less productive way. There's been little stabs into the unproductive nature of political relations that we've seen on this file in the past and are still seeing. But generally, doing the saying nothing is the right thing. Carla Beck isn't really helping anything with her letter. As Adam says, it's not something oppositions can be involved in. If she wants to do anything, please hop in the NDP DeLorean time machine and change the 1993 Conflict of Interest Act that your government put in, because it needs to be better. But that's kind of something that we could look at. But no, generally, I think what we're seeing from Scott Moe is what Scott Moe should be doing, which is kind of surprising.
Okay, well, we'll jump in the DeLorean in a moment. But first, I want to ask you about, I didn't know SIR was what we're calling the CER, Clean Electricity.
Murray's held the cool acronym. He knows it, man. This Gen Z guy over here.
But the provincial government is fighting with Ottawa over clean electricity rules. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so initially these regulations were supposed to net zero by 2035, and that rose alarm bells in many provinces, including Saskatchewan, where we have natural gas and coal as main providers. And there was this, we have to get the coal plants offline and all that scramble that was going to happen. We don't have a ready-made replacement. And so the government came out and there were a lot of threats about what they were going to do, jurisdictional threats, which still remain. But the federal government has pushed these to 2050 now, which is very similar to what Saskatchewan said with net zero by 2050. However, the minister responsible now, Jeremy Harrison, has come out and said that this is unrealistic, that they're unachievable, these goals that the federal government's putting out, that also there's jurisdictional issues, that Saskatchewan believes they have the jurisdiction. This is kind of a replay of the carbon tax argument. So that's Saskatchewan's side. The federal government said, no, this is completely legal. We're within our rights to do this. We listened to the provinces. You wanted more time. We're giving you more time. And so that's where that fight lands now. There hasn't been sort of a threat of we're going to to take you to court, but that's sort of the underlying thing that's in the background right now.
What do you make of this?
Jeremy Harrison's going to Jeremy Harrison, which is basically play politics in terms of this. And he continues to do so in his new role in the Crowns because, as Adam said, the battle has been somewhat in a major way won by pushing back regulations of 2050 is 2035, ridiculous regulations by Ottawa's part because it involved natural gas, which is the natural transition from dirty coal to whatever else our future brings us, whether it's greener energy, whether it's SMRs, small modular nuclear reactors, whatever it is, we do need that bridge time because this is Saskatchewan and this is how we've been lighting our homes for almost 100 years now was basically through burning coal. And so we do need opportunity for that transition, and that opportunity is becoming available. It's not; it's imperfect, but certainly better in terms of what we have. But once again, it's where we probably need not go as much in a country because if ever there's a time, because of the terror threat, where there has to be sort of a general unification, it is. I guess I'd sooner see them fighting on this particular file than fighting on the terror file.
Let's talk about the cabinet minister written up by the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. What is the latest?
This one's a bit different than the previous one with Gary Graywall, where the commissioner recommended that the MLAs punish him. And it turns out, as Marie kind of mentioned, that 1993 Act doesn't allow for that necessarily as an ex-MLA. Well, Jeremy Cockerell isn't getting the same kind of slap on the wrist. He was found to be in violation of conflict of rules, but it wasn't as strongly worded in what he was doing. Jeremy Cockerell said, I went to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, as all MLAs do and should, to see if I was in conflict with any of these things. One was his business interests in a window company that got government contracts. The other was his investments in helium, which also got government contracts. And ultimately, Maurice Haroff, the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, didn't come down as strongly, as hard on Jeremy Cockerell as he did on Gary Graywall. And the NDP is still saying that this isn't good enough, that Jeremy Cockerell was in violation, that he should have known better, that he benefited off these contracts, and they still have a problem with it.
What about you?
Well, I wish there was less hubris and a minister basically saying, yes, I've learned and I made a mistake, because he truly did. But within the confines of the Act, and that gets into the problem of an Act that hasn't been touched in 30 years, the problem is in the actual legislation and from the beginning. I don't blame the NDP back then or today for pushing for the Act or not writing it to perfection back then, because situations are hard to anticipate and acts do need to be touched up. Premier Scott Moe has said he will do that within the next year. I hope that we hold him to his word and it improves. The Cockerell situation, as Adam outlined, is not nearly as serious as the Graywall situation was. I don't like the hubris that we're still seeing from ministers that's saying, well, I'm going to pick out what it is that a officer of a legislature said that was positive and dwell on that when there's actually real problems within both the legislation and the actions of the ministers themselves. So let's make that the focus and let's make improvement of the Act the focus, as opposed to maybe the whether this was slightly less of a grievance than some other issue like Mr. Graywall's.
You mentioned Scott Moe and things he'll do in the future. What are you looking for in the future from Saskatchewan's Premier, both of you, in the new year, just in terms of timing and so on, right? There's been some speculation that he might be ready to enter a private sector job, or we don't know, right?
Yeah, I think it's a big question always after an election, especially, people would say, well, he won five straight majorities and he's still the Premier. I asked him about this in our year-end interview, mm-hmm. which I always do, and I kind of have done it as a little bit of a, hey, I ask you every year about this. And he said, I put my name on the list to commit myself to 4 years. I'm committed to this. But we do have, the recent history history of what Brad Wall did 1 year after being reelected to a majority. And that caught everyone by surprise, I think. And I've maintained that I think that Scott Moe is focused a lot on federal politics and seeing what happens with the Liberal government and waiting for the federal Liberals to be defeated. That could be any time now, really, imminently. And so I think once that happens, then I think the clock for Scott Moe starts ticking, but he hasn't committed to anything like that.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You're a big comic book fan, and it's the old question of whether Joker can exist without Batman. And now, depending on who your politics, either Joker or Batman is taking a walk in the snow in Ottawa right now. And I don't know, as I wrote today, whether Scott Moe will be all that far behind him falling in the footprints, because he is at that place in his career in terms of years as an MLA in public life, and almost by the time this term is over, a decade as premier. There's, I think, family pressures, as there always is on politicians, to think, hey, maybe you've put in enough time. Plus, I think there's the reality that if you look at the last election and putting forward whatever agenda, and he has demonstrated he had a right-wing agenda with Bill 137 and the change room policy that suddenly changed halfway through the election and changed again, that he could only go so far. And the message from the Saskatchewan voters is that, no, I want you to deal with the same old problems that seem unsolvable in Saskatchewan, which is healthcare and education and social issues and such. And it's not much fun having to sit around and deal with that particularly. And I think he's mentioned to a couple of people in year-end interviews and otherwise how he misses the people that he lost in the campaign, like Paul Merriman or Gene Mikowski or others. And so there's a lot of reasons to suggest, well, it won't be as perhaps as immediate as we might see in the Trudeau situation, although for some people say it's not immediate enough. What I think we might see is Scott Moe taking a fair bit of contemplation this year as to where he wants to go and where he can take the province further, and maybe when his departure was. I'd be absolutely shocked if I saw him run in the next election.
Thanks, you guys.
You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.